deal with the José Antonio castes? How do we deal with them? How do we make sure that, you know, I'm against punishing them. I'm trying to find ways in which we can convince those people who are our enemies to at least join the democratic conversation rather than being opposed to it.
We want to thank you so much for being with us, and we are going to check back next week after the runoff election on Sunday. Ariel Dorfman is a Chilean-American author, distinguished professor emeritus of literature at Duke University. We'll link to your op-ed in The Guardian. I Live Through the Darkness of the Pinochet Era. Is Chile Heading Back There? And that does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Remember, wearing a mask is an act of love.
Sweetest of love, I found out, came upon me and I was serene. Sweetest of love, guiding us through, came upon me and I was
from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO, Portland, no compromise in defense of the truth.
KBOO's End of Year Drive is happening right now. We invite you to become a member today by going to kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to 44321. Contribute now through December 31st, and your donation will be matched, dollar for dollar, up to $10,000, thanks to the generous support of the Ronnie S. LaCroute Fund of the Oregon Community Foundation. Join the KBOO family today at kboo.fm/give.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, feminist activist Bell Hooks dead at 69. Record-breaking tornado claims nearly 100 lives. And in international news, German police thwart anti-vax terrorist plot. Good evening, this is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, December 15th, 2021. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Ethan Sandweiss. Former Minneapolis policeman Derek Chauvin pleaded guilty today in federal court for violating the civil rights of George Floyd, an African-American man he was convicted of murdering last year. The plea means that in addition to the 22 years he's currently serving for Floyd's murder, he may face between 20 to 25 more years of jail time. Had Chauvin maintained his innocence, a conviction in federal court would have led to life in prison. Significantly, this marks the first time Chauvin has publicly admitted to killing Floyd. George Floyd's brother, Philonise, said, quote, "It's a good day for justice." A recent report shows that our neighbors in Washington state receive higher than average marks on overall health, but COVID-19 and suicide are growing killers in the Evergreen State. Eric Tagetoff has more on the story.
A new report provides a checkup on the health of people in Washington and the rest of the country. America's health rankings from the United Health Foundation assesses physical, mental, and social well-being and gives Washington State mostly high marks. But Dr. Ravi Johar, chief medical officer at United Healthcare, notes the COVID-19 pandemic contributed to an uptick in deaths between 2019 and 2020 nationwide.
We had a 17% increase in death rate. And that 17% doesn't even reflect some populations. We know Hispanics and African Americans, the death rate was even higher than that.
The report says the pandemic contributed to 70% of the death rate increase. While Washington State received high marks for its low rate of premature deaths and percentage of low birth weight infants, it also continued to fare worse than the national average in areas like the suicide rate. Through 2019, Washington State also had a higher rate of suicide among young people, ages 15 to 19. Matt Cantor is with the National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI Washington. He says services related to suicide are mostly reactive.
It's a really sad story. Someone takes their own life, a community's impacted, and then the services start. The more proactive we are in engaging communities, the more you're going to see those incidents not even happen.
Cantor says it's also important for services to be culturally relevant for the young people they are helping, noting the suicide rate is especially high in indigenous communities across the country. Johar adds mental well-being is an important aspect of health.
Being able to have a support system, talking to friends, and finding a way to be socially active really, really makes a big difference in your mental well-being. And we know that mental well-being has a tremendous effect on physical well-being, too.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedov.
Author and activist Bell Hooks died today at 69. Her first major book, Ain't I a Woman, published in 1981, has become widely recognized as an important feminist text. Among her 30 other books are Feminist Theory from Margin to Center, All About Love, New Visions, and We Real Cool, Black Men and Masculinity. Born Gloria Jean Watkins, she adopted her maternal great-grandmother's name as a pen name, but used lowercase letters to distinguish herself from her family member. Since 2004, she taught at Berea College in Kentucky, which offers free tuition. Author Margaret Atwood told The Guardian, quote, "Bell Hooks embodied amazing courage and deeply felt intelligence. Her dedication to the cause of ending sexism, sexist exploitation, and oppression was exemplary." The Omicron COVID variant has been found to multiply about 70 times quicker than the original and Delta versions in bronchial tissue, which could help explain its rapid transmission. Michael Chan Chi-Wai, who led the study at the University of Hong Kong, said the results needed to be interpreted with caution because severe disease is determined not only by how quickly the virus replicates, but also by a person's immune response. The new study also confirms that the Omicron variant is more resistant to vaccines than others, which could be a factor in its rapid spread. The World Health Organization designated Omicron as a variant of concern in late November. It has now been found in nearly 40 countries worldwide. The Omicron variant of COVID-19 virus has been detected in Oregon. The first three cases were identified in Multnomah and Washington counties, and all three patients were fully vaccinated. Two had recently traveled outside of the United States. Experts expect an exponential increase in the number of Oregon cases. Governor Kate Brown reminded Oregonians recently that getting vaccinated, including a booster and wearing a mask, are the best ways to save lives and keep businesses open. She said, quote, "It was only a matter of time before we identified the first case of the Omicron variant in Oregon. All Oregonians 16 years and older are eligible to receive a booster. To date, only 21% of Oregon's total population has received the extra vaccine dose." Almost a year after the Capitol attack, a House probe revealed text messages sent from Fox News personalities Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham to Trump's chief of staff, Mark Meadows. The text messages urged Meadows to encourage a public statement from Trump. Hannity texted Meadows, quote, "Can he make a statement? Ask people to leave the Capitol?" Hannity and Ingraham have maintained that the attack was perpetrated by Antifa as part of a smear campaign against the former president. Their text messages prove that they were aware that the terrorist attack was enabled by Trump and carried out by his supporters. It took the two news anchors nearly a day to formulate their response. Hannity took the offensive, attacking Congressional Republican Liz Cheney for her role in the Senate committee. Hannity also said that the Capitol attack was, quote, "not an insurrection." Recent revelations on the extent of Republican involvement in the Capitol attack also include a text message to Mike Pence from Rep. Jim Jordan, urging the former vice president to interfere in the vote counting process. The January 6th House panel is also seeking the release of texts from Ivanka Trump, who the Republican Senator Lindsey Graham revealed was acting as an intermediary with the former president. Records released by the Washington Post on October 31st showed that Graham had repeatedly called Ivanka, suggesting ways for her father to restrain his supporters. January 6th lawsuits continue against right-wing groups that invaded the U.S. Capitol. With more on this and other stories, it's Mary Sherman with 2021 Talks.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
While some desperately want to rewrite history and sweep the events of January 6th under the rug, the District of Columbia and its residents have chosen to speak truth.
Washington, D.C. Attorney General Carl Racine filed a civil lawsuit against the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers for allegedly playing a leading role in the attack at the Capitol. The lawsuit invokes the Ku Klux Klan Act of 1871. The U.S. House voted on holding former Trump Chief of Staff Mark Meadows in contempt of Congress for failing to appear before the January 6th Select Committee. Republican Liz Cheney read incriminating texts Meadows received to encourage then-President Donald Trump to stop the attack.
One text Mr. Meadows received said, quote, "We are under siege here at the Capitol."
However, Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia and other House Republicans opposed the charge.
It's being held by nothing but a kangaroo court. Congress's job is to make laws, not enforce them.
Meadows' attorney said his client has fully cooperated by providing information while honoring Trump's claims of executive privilege. House Democrats formally objected to GOP Congressman Scott Perry's comments regarding a proposal to create an anti-Muslim bias office. Perry questioned why it doesn't clearly define Islamophobia.
My friends on the other side of the aisle are creating an office in our State Department that will likely spew anti-Semitic hatred and attack Western ideas throughout the world under the farce of protecting Islam.
Perry also implied the bill's sponsor, Ilhan Omar, had ties to a terrorist organization. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer promised after-hours sessions during the holidays unless Republicans start to quickly confirm President Joe Biden's diplomatic nominees.
We've had to file cloture on twice as many nominees at this point in the Biden administration than Republicans had to do under President Trump. Republicans are intentionally throwing sand in the gears of the Senate's confirmation process.
Meanwhile, Democrats Joe Manchin and Bernie Sanders announced they'll oppose FDA nominee Robert Califf over his ties to drug companies. 10 newly elected mayors met with Biden at the White House to discuss the new infrastructure law. Atlanta Mayor-elect Andre Dickens said they also shared their policy goals.
We have the same set of challenges with COVID, with a rising crime and income inequality and the need for affordable housing and, of course, this infrastructure bill.
A federal judge ruled that the Treasury Department could disclose Trump's tax returns to the House Ways and Means Committee, but gave him 14 days to appeal. And New Jersey's ousted state Senate president's now eyeing the governor's mansion. Democrat Steve Sweeney, who was defeated in November by Republican truck driver Ed Durr, told union leaders he will make a run for governor in 4 years. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Congress approved raising the debt ceiling by $2.5 trillion. The party line vote could keep the government solvent until 2023. The vote ends months of tension over the possibility of a U.S. government default. The national debt rose dramatically under the Trump administration, due both to tax cuts on corporations and the wealthy, as well as an expensive COVID relief program. Had the U.S. defaulted, the national credit rating would have decreased. This would have increased interest rates for consumer loans and likely sparked a recession. Still, the Federal Reserve predicts 3 interest rate hikes in the next year to stave off inflation. Last month, inflation hit a 39-year high. The Build Back Better Act is meant to be the cornerstone of President Biden's domestic agenda, a sweeping social welfare bill that addresses everything from climate change to universal child care. Once again, one man is threatening to tank the entire effort. West Virginia Democratic Senator Joe Manchin is refusing to support the bill over his opposition to an enhanced child tax credit. The tax credit will provide up to $300 per month per child for families. When asked by NBC why he didn't support child tax credits, instead of answering, Manchin launched into an expletive-ridden tirade. The original Build Back Better bill stood at $6 trillion and was intended as a complete overhaul of the country's moribund social safety net, as well as a bulwark against the worst effects of climate change. Largely due to heel-dragging by Manchin and Arizona Democrat Kyrsten Sinema, that number has been reduced to $1.75 trillion. Despite his efforts to gut the plan, it appears that the reduced amount is still too much for Manchin. KBOO News poet Dan Raphael is a people person.
Some of the people who died in the Midwest tornadoes died because their bosses wouldn't let them leave their jobs. Jobs, or more precisely the profit from others' labors, is what capitalism's all about. So work visas are good because these are skilled workers only here at their employer's consent who can't bring spouses or children who could need public services. But immigrants are bad because they're families of old and young and employers don't hold their leashes. Likewise, capitalism opposes abortion because they need the bodies, poorly fed and educated, ready to accept any wage and conditions. Jesus lived under Roman occupation. He was a man of color. He had friends and followers from tax collectors to fishermen to sex workers. If only he hadn't thrown the money changers out of the temple. Though I know at solstice the days get longer, there's always something inside me thinking maybe things will just keep getting darker and colder. But the light always comes back, doesn't it? For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You are listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $45,000 by December 31st. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned for a conversation with the Portland faith leaders opposing restrictive abortion laws at 5:30, followed at 5:45 by Noise Filter. Tonight's weather will be 30s and rainy. Tomorrow's temperatures are in the 40s, but the rain will taper off. Today in 1973, the American Psychiatric Association voted unanimously to remove homosexuality from its list of psychiatric disorders. The quote of the day is from Bell Hooks. "I will not have my life narrowed down. I will not bow down to someone else's whim or to someone else's ignorance." U.S. federal agencies kill thousands of predators every year in Nevada at the request of ranchers using bombs and poison gas. Conservation groups are suing. With more, here's Suzanne Potter.
Conservation groups want the feds to do a full environmental impact report on an agency that authorizes the killing of coyotes and other wildlife that prey on cattle and sheep. Two nonprofit organizations have filed suit against the USDA's Wildlife Services Program, along with the U.S. Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management. Adam Bronstein with Western Watersheds Project, one of the plaintiffs, says the Wildlife Services agents kill thousands of animals per year in Nevada, usually at the request of livestock operations.
We have records of 29 mountain lions, 5 foxes, 2 black bears, 1 bobcat, about 2,500 ravens, and 3,662 coyotes, and this is just in 2020.
All three agencies declined to comment, citing pending litigation. The lawsuit alleges that Wildlife Services workers shoot coyotes from the air and use body-gripping traps, neck snares, and leg-hold traps that kill other animals as well, badgers, skunks and rabbits, ground squirrels, beavers, and more. The suit alleges the program also uses gas to poison coyote dens and M44 sodium cyanide bombs to kill foxes and coyotes. The program is carried out mostly in Elko, Eureka, Humboldt, and White Pine counties. The law comes in response to a July 2020 decision during the Trump administration that Wildlife Services Predator Damage Management Program doesn't significantly impact the environment. However, Bronstein says it takes place largely on land designated as wilderness or wilderness study areas.
The environment is harmed by killing a native wildlife because it disrupts natural systems. The real disruption is livestock grazing out on public lands. That's the true disturbance.
The Humane Society analyzed data from the USDA and found the loss of livestock nationwide due to predation is minuscule, far surpassed by instances of livestock dying from dehydration, disease, lightning strikes, or ingesting poisonous plants. For Nevada News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Devastating tornadoes across the Midwest and Upper South killed nearly 100 people this weekend and wiped out at least one entire town. In some hard-hit areas, emergency responders predict that despite freezing conditions, residents may not have electricity for months. Humanitarian groups have descended on Jonesboro, Arkansas, to distribute aid and clean up destruction. Emily Scott with the Public News Service talks with Jonesboro residents and aid groups.
Disaster relief responders are assessing the damage from the tornadoes that took two lives in northeast Arkansas and caused major destruction to hundreds of homes, businesses, and other structures. At the American Red Cross of Arkansas, Lori Arnold says their disaster relief team has been distributing emergency cleanup supplies in Craighead County in Jonesboro. She says, along with surveying damage, Red Cross is offering mental health services, along with water and snacks to storm victims.
We're just trying to locate all of the areas, especially the more rural ones that don't get as much media attention, to make sure that we are getting through to all of the people who need help. We're seeing debris spread all over big lots of farmland and big neighborhood areas, and it's a really devastating thing to see.
Arnold says some of the ways people can assist are through financial donations to disaster relief organizations. And donating blood is helpful, as many blood drives in the hard-hit areas will be canceled despite a nationwide blood supply shortage. Humanitarian aid group Samaritan's Purse has about 40 volunteers in Poinsett County who will assist with the cleanup through Christmas Eve. Clay Steelman with the group says, as a native Arkansan, it's been heartwarming to see the outpouring of support from community members.
You get to see neighbor helping neighbor. They're all gathering around, coming together and helping clean up homes. The communities are really rallying around each other, pitching in where they can, and Samaritan's Purse is kind of stepping in those gaps, along with some of the other relief agencies that are up here.
He adds, Samaritan's Purse is still looking for additional volunteers to assist in daily cleanups. There's currently one shelter open to people in Truman in Poinsett County. Similar efforts are underway in other states hit by the Quad State tornado, Kentucky, Missouri, and Tennessee. I'm Emily Scott with Arkansas News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Tornadoes aren't unusual in the South during the winter, but this week's record-setting storm was a historical anomaly. Nadia Ramlagan talks with climatologists in Tennessee about how these storms occur and what people can do to stay safe.
The tornadoes that ripped through multiple states, killing more than 100 people, were created by a very specific set of climate conditions, according to two Tennessee climatologists. Associate Professor of Geography at the University of Tennessee, Kelsey Ellis, explains December tornadoes are not unusual in the Southeast, and says these types of storms occur when cold, dense air interacts with warm air, creating unstable climate conditions. But Ellis notes the fact that one of the powerful tornadoes traveled more than 230 miles is, as she puts it, an extreme anomaly.
The time of year is not, the time of day is not, even though both of those can surprise people that it's a cool season and that it's overnight. But the long track of this one is extremely rare, and it requires a very specific set of environmental conditions.
The previous record for a long-track tornado is from 1925, when an F5 tri-state tornado traveled 219 miles through Missouri, Illinois, and Indiana. Now, the so-called quad-state tornado is expected to break that record. In the Department of Geosciences at Middle Tennessee State University, Alyssa Haas points out that because tornadoes can occur any time of day, it's important to have multiple reliable methods for receiving warnings, since power and cell phone service often go down during severe weather. She adds increasing research on these events could help with preparedness.
We don't know every single thing that goes into the formation of a tornado, and that can affect whether we have timely warnings or not.
So far, the National Weather Service has reported at least 38 tornadoes occurred simultaneously during the outbreak. This story is a collaboration with The Conversation. This is Nadia Ramlagan for Tennessee News Service.
Water levels in the Colorado River are depleting, which spells trouble for the millions of people living in the American West. Indigenous groups have historically been excluded from conversations about the river, despite their extensive treaty rights. With that story and more, it's Megan Kamrick with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Megan Kamrick in for Antonia Gonzalez. A big conference about the shrinking Colorado River began this week in Las Vegas. The river is the primary source of drinking water and irrigation for millions of people in the region. Discussions among scientists, state, and tribal officials focused on the West's historic drought. The Mountain West News Bureau's Nate Hedgie files this report from day one of the conference.
State officials from Utah to New Mexico to Wyoming all agreed.
the Colorado River is in dire straits. Opening remarks of the conference focused on severe drought that's helping bring the nation's biggest reservoirs to their lowest levels on record. There are also some calls for more collaboration between Western states as well as tribes along the Colorado. But indigenous communities have also been historically excluded from talks about the river. Councilman Christopher Tubby with the Ute Indian Tribe says that's still the case in Utah.
Anything that has anything to do with the water, we've been totally blocked out. We've never been consulted on anything, any decisions.
The Utes have treaty rights to a significant amount of Colorado River water, but Tubby says the state is ignoring those rights and using some of that water. A Utah water official pointed out that the state has created a new agency devoted to the Colorado River crisis. It doesn't include any tribal members on its board, but he said they would be invited to join advisory councils. For National Native News, I'm Nate Hedgie.
This week, the Canadian government said it would set aside billions of dollars to compensate Indigenous people who faced abuse as children in the country's residential schools. The United States has not announced any similar financial plans. The Mountain West News Bureau's Maggie Mullen reports.
The money is equal to about $31 billion U.S. dollars and is intended to reform Canada's child welfare system. And it came about after several weeks of negotiations between the Canadian government, the Assembly of First Nations, and others. At a press conference on Monday, Crown Indigenous Relations Minister Mark Miller said the price is high because the government failed to take action despite knowing about the problems for decades.
This is 30 years of the cost of failure, and that cost is high.
The compensation plan still needs formal agreements and judicial approval. It follows two class action lawsuits by the Assembly of First Nations filed in March 2019 and January 2020. They were intended to secure compensation for harms inflicted on Indigenous people.
And that was Maggie Mullen. After missing a year because of COVID-19, the annual Lakota Nation Invitational Basketball Tournament is back in Rapid City. Richard Tubles reports.
Last year's cancellation prompted organizers to worry about the future of L&I. They used the downtime to plan, focus, and expand this year's tournament. L&I founder and tournament director Brian Brewer says they worked with the Great Plains Tribal Leaders Health Board on COVID-19 protocols.
They're going to be there. They come up with a COVID plan also, but they will also be at the arena. If anyone wants to be tested, or if they want to get a vaccine or anything like that. So they are cooperating with us, and we're working together, and we're really hoping that it will be a safe event as possible.
For the first time, the entire tournament will be live streamed for a fee. This includes the basketball tournament, poetry slam, hand game tournament, and knowledge bowl. New events include a girls wrestling tournament and esports competitions. Organizers say the event has a $6 million annual economic impact. In Rapid City, I'm Richard Tubles.
And for National Native News, I'm Megan Kamrick.
German police thwarted a plot today by anti-vax extremists to kill the governor of Saxony. Raids in Dresden and Heidenau seized weapons from the group Dresden Offline-Vernetzung, including crossbows. Saxony is located in the country's disadvantaged post-communist East and is a bastion of Germany's resurgent fascist movement. It also has the lowest vaccination rate in the country at just over 61.9%. Dresden Offline-Vernetzung was involved in violent protests against COVID-19 restrictions, supported by the country's premier far-right party, Alternative for Deutschland. Germany is the latest of several Central European countries to reinstate lockdown measures and impose restrictions on unvaccinated citizens. Violent demonstrations also took place in Austria and in the Netherlands. Germany's new chancellor, Olaf Scholz, made a public statement against extremist violence, reaffirming that this, quote, small minority would not be allowed to impose its will on society. Scholz is Germany's first new leader in 16 years, marking a historic transfer of power after its 16 years of stable leadership by former Chancellor Angela Merkel. The heads of state for Russia and China, two historic rivals, held a video conference this morning aimed at strengthening ties. Russian President Vladimir Putin called his meeting with Chinese Premier Xi Jinping, quote, a true example of interstate cooperation. Russia faces potentially devastating sanctions from the EU and USA as its armies show no sign of backing away from the Ukraine border. The call also comes as the U.S. and some allies decided to boycott China's Winter Olympics over Beijing's genocide of Uyghur Muslims. Putin said that he rejected, quote, attempts to politicize sport in the Olympic movement. Jinping praised Putin for supporting, quote, China's efforts to protect key national interests. You're listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael and Josh Salem. The producer is myself, Ethan Sandweiss, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Nadia Romlagon, Mary Sherman, Megan Kamerick, Emily Scott, Eric Tegedoff, and Suzanne Potter. Our evening news director is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Ethan Sandweiss. Coming up next, Portland faith leaders oppose restrictive abortion laws, followed by Noise Filter. All our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $45,000 by December 31st. If you'd like to become a member, you can go online to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.